Hello and welcome to Required Reading, the podcast that revisits the most impactful books from our childhood. My name is Erin Voles. I'm a writer, actor, and comedian, and I'm your host. And our guest today is Sierra Marilyn Riley. Sierra is a queer Italian-Canadian actor and writer based in Toronto, Ontario. You can read her words on pop culture and more in a bunch of Canadian magazines, and you can watch her face emoting and more on Hallmark's Mistletoe Murders and Amazon's Motorheads. Her debut YA novel, The Dark Cove Theatre Society, is out on October 7th from Anik Press, and her hobbies include recording bird song on her Merlin app, eating pasta, and believing in ghosts. Hello and welcome.
Hi, how are you?
Oh, I'm good. I'm so excited because today is perhaps one of my favorite books, definitely one of my favorite books from childhood that I've never revisited as an adult. I was so excited to finally do this one.
I totally forgot everything about this book.
Yes.
I'm actually not sure if I just pretended to finish it when I was a kid or if I have just forgotten everything about it until today, other than the general vibes.
Yes.
So I was very excited.
Oh my gosh. We from 1978 by Ellen Raskin, winner of the Newbery Medal, The Westing Game.
I am holding my copy. It's like from the 90s. It's not my original copy. I had the one with the black cover and kind
Yes.
of the, yes, that is the cover. I have the one with kind of a cartoonish house with money flying all over the place. I found it in a little library and I was very excited to obtain it. Even though it's not the cover of my childhood, it's a cover of a
Yeah. I got this book from my parents' house, so I am 99% sure this is, you know, my fourth grade copy.
Wow, that's in good condition.
The epilogue is kind of falling out, which is a little stressful, but other than that, we're all good. I remember reading it and adoring it, but not a lot of details. I remembered that there was something about like north, south, east, and west. And that was kind of it.
That's a big piece.
At the very end.
At the very end.
Oh my gosh. The Westing Game is, for those who don't know, it is about a wealthy man, Samuel Westing, who dies and then invites 16 people who all happen to live or be affiliated with one apartment building right next to his house to come play a game in order to inherit his estate. It is a mystery. It's a thriller. It is one of the best books I've ever read in my life. I'm obsessed with this book.
And reading it as an adult, I'm kind of amazed that children read it.
Yeah.
I was baffled putting together all the many, many pieces. It's kind of a masterpiece of
Oh my
mystery.
gosh. It really, truly is. I like all the characters when they're brought together for this first game are given a bunch of different words as clues. And so I had a whole page written out of the clues and the couples because they're put in two-person teams. And I felt like a beautiful mind, pulling all the pieces, putting it together. So excited.
Okay, I need to know, did you solve it? Like, did you remember the mystery's answer and were you solving it as it went?
I remembered all of the words more or less were from America the Beautiful. I remembered that much. And there's little strings of not necessarily patriotism, but definitely Americana. Like the dead Samuel Westing is dressed as Uncle Sam. There's a big reference of 4th of July and fireworks, which I loved, even though it all takes place around Halloween and November and they're snowed in.
Yes. Okay. So brief tangent. I'm a seasonal reader. Like I'll read summery books in the summer, fally books in the fall, etc. Certain genres are like associated with different seasons. And this book was a little confusing for me, vibes wise. We have the 4th of July, we've got Halloween, we've got a blizzard, and then we have fall weather again in the end. Right now I'm in the transitionary period of my seasons because it's getting a little cooler where I am. So it felt somehow appropriate with the 4th of July references and the coziness. But yeah, it was really all over the place seasonally.
Yeah, I have just a little information about Ellen Rask and the author, because the book is set in Wisconsin, which I thought was sort of like, you don't get a lot of books set in Wisconsin, but she was born in Milwaukee and grew up in Wisconsin, so it's a local thing for her. She won the Newbery twice, which is like the highest award in the US you can get for a children's book. Won it, excuse me, for Westing Game, which was her final novel. And then 3 years earlier for a novel called Figs and Phantoms, which I have to check out.
Great title.
What a great title. Westinghouse was ranked number 9 in 2012 among all-time children's novels in a survey from the School Library Journal. I agree. She was also like an extremely accomplished graphic design artist. So she designed over 1,000 dust jackets for books, including the very first edition of A Wrinkle in Time, which I thought so cool. And also reading it, you can tell that she's a visual artist. The visuals are so strong. The imagery, you just remember so much of it. Even if you don't remember the plot, you remember those images. And then a little bit about 1978, the rainbow LGBT flag flies for the very first time in its original form. The first Home Depot movie, or excuse me, the first Home Depot opens. And then
Home Depot movie is coming. Someone's working on getting that
they've got that
IP
sick bass line.
right now.
Yeah. But speaking of movies, both Grease and Halloween are released. They're next to each other in my notes. So, I mean, I should have asked this earlier. What is your story with this book? How did it come into your life?
It came into my life not through school, which I know it was like part of the literal required reading for many classrooms, but through another route that I think is very common, one of the strongest conduits of the transferers of culture, the older cousin. My older cousin was talking about the book and also the movie, which I did try to find and I couldn't. This movie is, it's a rare gem, and I wasn't about to spend $50 on eBay for it.
Oh my gosh, no. Please don't.
I remember him saying that he thought it was really funny in the movie how all the characters talk very normally, and then all of a sudden they'll say the Westing Game really seriously. So that is kind of my strongest memory of this. I did own the DVD at one point. I did own the book, and I was very into the Haunted Mansion. Like, not only the Haunted Mansion, Disney's A Haunted Mansion, which absolutely yes, but just like the concept of the Haunted Mansion. That same cousin was also very into that. So we would play Resident Evil, and there was this board game called 1313 Dead End Drive. All of the Haunted Mansion-y things. So this kind of fell into that, even though the mansion is not haunted. The Westinghouse is just a really awesome house on a hill. But the spooky vibes are there. There is
Oh
a
my gosh.
corpse question mark found in the mansion. So really it checks a lot of boxes for me, though I really did not remember anything. I understand why I gravitated towards it as a kid.
Yeah, I don't know how I found it. Maybe I read it from the library, which, like, I did not check out books from the library a lot. I want to say, like, maybe somehow, like, a librarian read us a chapter, and that's what I don't know. I was a very studious kid, but I did not actually read a lot on my own time. So I wonder, yeah, how I sat down and read a whole thing. But it grips you immediately. And something that was huge for me is that everyone in this book basically lives in the same apartment building.
Yes.
That's like across a field or a pond or something from the Westinghouse. Samuel Westing has, 10 huge businesses, and they're mostly paper products, which I love. And literally, I was not a huge fan of Suite Life of Zack and Cody, but I would play like a game where I took a bunch of sheets of printer paper and I pretended they were each a different level of a hotel. And I would draw, like, this is this person and they live on the 10th floor and this is their whole backstory and this is the beef
That
they
is a
have.
fun game. I want to play that now.
So this is exactly that. You know, this is it's like 10 stories or something, and one family has a Chinese restaurant on the top floor and another family has a coffee shop in the bottom floor. They all move in all of a sudden and then things start happening. So I loved, even though there are minimum 16 characters, 16 heirs, they are all so clear and memorable and distinct. The best books are the one where I'm like, I just love it. I don't know what to say. I just love it.
Yeah, honestly, this apartment building, although there are bombs that go off, et cetera, kind of my ideal living situation. Just a utopian little group of people that are, they're forced together to work together. But my favorite part of this book was learning about all their little relationships that so for context, in Samuel Westing's will, he pairs people up to solve the mystery, and the pairs are pretty random, and the sweetest, unlikely friendships come out of it. And I just loved reading about how they all would get together at the coffee shop for a little meeting, or at the Chinese restaurant for a little meeting, and they'd go over to each other's apartments. This sounds like the best time. I want to be
Absolutely.
friends with my neighbors like this.
100%. Especially, I don't know about you, but I was an only child. And so, like, one of the most prevalent sensations was isolation and loneliness. So, I think, like, always one of my greatest dreams has been put all my friends in one house and we all live together forever. And these incredible relationships do come out. I mean, they're literally snowed in at one point. There are, like you said, three bombs that go off. And you, she has such a talent of like really slowly pulling out information and putting characters with each other that are sort of, you can see similarities and you can see differences and they pull out so much. Like the character growth is gorgeous in this book. And it's only like less than 200 pages.
Especially considering how many characters there are. Okay, this book kind of reminds me of my favorite TV show ever, Lost. Did you watch Lost?
I've seen like the first season.
Okay, so a bunch of people forced together, unlikely friendships arise. Also, ahead of its time representation.
Yes.
When you're considering it's 1978, this is quite a diverse cast and like a lot of forward-thinking idea, like a lot of ideas that I'm sure weren't that popular at the time, like Angela and being engaged, and everyone was pushing for that, and she does not want to be engaged. Even just like the friendship between problematic Mrs. Wexler and Mr. Hu, owner of the Chinese restaurant, and she, I don't know, I loved seeing the pairings. It was a little treasure to read.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I like that you talk about sort of the representation because one of my favorite characters, and I want to ask yours, one of my favorite characters is Judge J.J. Ford, who is a black woman who's maybe like district attorney, or she's a very, very high-ranking judge in Wisconsin. She's like the first female judge in the state or something. And I loved that they all start hanging out at her apartment, and her apartment sort of becomes home base throughout the course of the novel. When they gather the 16 heirs, everyone is like, I don't know why I am here. I never met Samuel Westing. I'm definitely not an heir. And so she has a little bit of backstory with him that she keeps guarded very safely. She was one of my favorite characters. I adored her. And there's a lot of her perspective is really interesting because she is able to call out, like, oh, here's a little bit of racism. Oh, here's a little bit of classism. Here's someone making an assumption about me without actually knowing me. So well done.
Yes, loved her. There was this moment that I really liked because I was about to be kind of pissed off when Theo, who's a teenager, goes and follows Otis and Crow to their soup kitchen. And at first, Theo's surrounded by these homeless people and he's describing them very rudely, like these filthy miscreants. And then, you know, a paragraph later, he catches himself and he sees how generous Otis and Crow were being, serving soup. And he realized, he said, I'm the dirty one. I was like, that is amazing awareness that I think a lot of people could probably still be reminded of a lot of these things, like a lot of what these moments that are, she kind of gets the reader on the side of the person and then flips it. And I just love
Yes.
that.
Like the emotional intelligence in this book is unfathomable. And Theo is the maybe 18-year-old son of the coffee shop owner on the first floor. He takes care of his younger brother, Chris, who has some kind of like maybe epilepsy. He's in a wheelchair. Throughout the course of the novel, he gets medicine where it's making it easier for him to speak. And Chris, I love just all the little details. Like Chris loves bird watching, and Otis is this 60-year-old delivery boy. And the detail I love about Otis is he's always wearing like an aviator's cap. It's just
Yeah.
the little thing, and it's so rich. Crow is the housekeeper or the maid of the apartment building, and she's very religious.
Crow
Yeah.
was the one person I had an issue with.
Oh, say more.
Her character was kind of just, she was a little bit of a red herring. She was the obvious freak of the
Yes.
community. Like, she was, not to say people who are religious are freaks, but she was very intense and very, maybe a little creepy. And did you share that experience?
You know, there's so many characters of the 16. I think she was definitely the smallest role. And I don't know if we really ever got deeply rooted into her perspective. Like Mrs. or Madam Hu, who's the wife of the Chinese restaurant owner, has only been in the country for maybe 2 years. She doesn't really speak a lot of English, but we, even with her, who's a pretty minor character, we get really rooted in her perspective. It only happens a couple times. But we get rooted in her stress and her anxiety. So I think Crow, even though she plays a very big part in the end, Crow felt like I kept forgetting that she was here almost.
Yeah, and whenever she was there, it was just like talking about how everyone was sinners. Then at the end, jumping way ahead, her and Otis get married, which was a fun surprise. However, we didn't get to see Crow enough to understand how that match made any sense at all.
That's true.
Although Otis was kind of playing a part the whole time as well, but I
Yeah.
was so surprised when they got together. I was like, I think I needed to see a little bit more of this.
That's true. That's one of the few times where Raskin really tells instead of showing. There's a lot of,
Yes.
there's this wonderful, I mean, it's not in a courtroom, it's in the judge's apartment, but this sort of great courtroom scene as Turtle, who we must talk about. Turtle is this,
She's my favorite.
yes, she's like up there. I don't know if she's my favorite, but she probably is.
She's kind of the obvious favorite.
Yes, and she's
But
kind of our
I'm,
protagonist.
yeah, but I'm here for her.
Oh my gosh, I love her so much. But Turtle sort of does that. I like hate in mysteries when, you know, it's like it's the end of the third act and Sherlock is like, "Let me explain everything that has happened," and or Poirot, and reveal which of you is the killer. But Turtle does it so fun, especially because Raskin does it in a way where Turtle is like, "Oh, I have to like make this last a little longer." Or like, "Oh, I just understood something now for the first time, and now I can't say it because I have to reveal this thing and that thing." Turtle is the youngest of two daughters in the Wexler family. The Wexler family has Dr. Jake Wexler on the first floor. He's a podiatrist. He has his wife, Grace, who is very society woman, superficial. She adores Angela, who I think is 19, who's her older daughter, who's engaged to a plastic surgeon intern, Denton Deer, or D. Denton Deer. And then their 13-year-old daughter, Turtle, who, is always kicking people in the shins. She's got this great braid, and she really is sort of our in, especially because it's a book for young people. Let's talk about Turtle. Let's dive into Sweet Turtle.
She was hilarious. She was, yeah, as you said, she's 13 or whatever. And her take on the Westing clues is that he's trying to tell the heirs to invest in the stock market, and whoever makes the most money wins. And I just found that all so hilarious. The way she spoke about the stock market just killed me. I also found it very endearing, her relationship with Flora Baumbach, the
Yes.
dressmaker, who they kind of form a mother-daughter relationship that both of them needed. And Flora is absolutely realizing that the stock market is not what they're supposed to be doing from the first minute,
No,
but she just
Turtle
goes along
just,
with it to
yeah.
indulge Turtle. And it's just the sweetest thing. I think she's the obvious favorite. She is the protagonist. We follow her from beginning to end more than anyone, I think. but she gave me a laugh. Most
Yeah.
of all. And then I actually cried at the end.
Yes. Yes.
I was like, why are we jumping 5 years forward and then however many years forward after that? I'm usually not a huge fan of those kind of last chapters where it's like 10 years later. But this one had me like crying. We also saw the most growth in Turtle, kind of subtly, whereas other people were kind of seen to be a little bit closed off at the beginning and then open up to something at the end. Like Theo goes to university and he realizes there's more to life and et cetera, et cetera. But Turtles was, I feel like we were along the ride a little bit more.
Yeah, I
And I
love
loved
that.
that she kicked people and everyone
Yes.
hated her and she had a crush on Theo, or no, Doug. And I mean, it certainly says something that I'm like not a teenager, but I related the most to her. But I found it so funny when she kind of realized that Doug was really annoying halfway through. Like, I can't believe I ever had a crush on this jerk. We've all been there.
Oh, I love Turtle so much. I think Turtle, I just a couple weeks ago read Harriet the Spy for this podcast. I clocked Wicked on your bookshelf, which is one of my favorite books of all time. But all of those women and young girls are so prickly. They are not trying to soften or smooth themselves. They're angry, they're mean, they're spiteful. And I love that. I love that so much. I love that Turtle gets these clues and she's like, well, I already like the stock market, so it must be related to the stock market. I think that's a great little thing just about like internal biases. And Turtle is pretty much reviled by her mother, Grace, who loves Angela, who's the perfect daughter. Turtle is paired off with Flora Baumbach, who's the wedding dress maker for Angela's wedding, who lives in the building. And Flora had lost a daughter, we slowly discover. And there's one moment that I flagged just because it was so devastating, where Turtle's mom is too busy to braid her hair. So Flora does it. And Flora does it perfectly. And she says, I like when you call me Alice instead of Turtle. And she says to Baumbach, maybe I could call you Mrs. Baba, because they can't say bomb because it's causing distress among all these bombings. And Baumbach says, why not just Baba? And Raskin says, that's exactly what Turtle wanted to hear.
It was such an emotional moment. I loved their relationship. It was so sad. It was so sad at parts. And they say at the end, you got the partner that you needed. And with them, it was especially true. I loved their relationship. And you're so right. I love seeing the naughty little girls. I think because I was a little bit of a troublemaker. And like Junie B. Jones was my big icon. And Eloise. Speaking of the hotel levels, I have this copy and I think I'll try to buy it for myself again, as opposed to trying to just wait for a box of books to show up from my parents' basement. But it was a copy of Eloise in the Plaza where there was this page where you opened it up and it expanded. I remember it expanding very, very high, but I was probably very small when I was doing this. And you could see her going up the elevator onto all the different levels. Anyway, your game made me think of that. But I love a character like Turtle. And she was quite the opposite to Angela, who I also liked.
Yeah, Angela goes on this, she's very quiet and very reserved. But like you were saying, Angela is a young woman in the late 70s who doesn't want to get married and is set up in this relationship and is sort of trying to figure out, what do I do with this, and what do I want? And she's paired up with Sydell Pulaski, who is a secretary, and very, oh, what's the word?
Attention seeking.
Yeah, she's eccentric.
Yes.
She's
I went for
But
the
she's like,
mean one.
she's injured herself somehow, so she's wearing these crutches that are always painted very bright to match with her outfits, and she's got these outlandish ideas, and she implicitly gives Angela permission to be a little uncouth and permission to deviate from the expectations and the plans, which is gorgeous.
Yeah, and it was a really sweet moment when Siddal goes to the hospital and the doctor tells Angela she made up this disease to get attention, basically. And then she goes into the hospital room and Siddal's like, what did the doctor say? Kind of nervous. And Angela just pretends that her disease is real. Says, the doctor says your condition might worsen in 10 years or whatever. It was so sweet. I mean, in a strange way, I really loved that moment too.
Yeah, it's, I mean, like you said, and like they said in the, I guess it's in the ending, like everyone gets the partner they need. Grace is paired up with Mr. Hu, who runs the Chinese store, and they really loosen each other up and they make a big smashing success of the Chinese restaurant. It's so sweet. I loved every aspect of it. I wanted to ask, how do you think that this maybe impacted you as a writer or as a creative in any way?
I think it did. It definitely impacted my tastes. As I said, I was very into haunted mansion stuff as a kid. I loved mysteries. I loved kind of cozy mysteries, which I would classify this as. And, you know, I went on to say Lost was my favorite show, and I do see parallels there. And then even now, as an adult, right now, I'm playing this game called Blueprints, which is very Westing game coded. So I think it really, if not fed into my tastes, did change them. And then while I'm reading this, and I think, you know, it could just be, this is what I gravitate towards, this is what I like. But while I'm reading this, and my first book is coming out, I found so many parallels with, I wrote basically the kind of things that I would like to read.
Yeah.
And I found so many things, like in my book, I have appendices that are, you know, found texts, and they have them in this book, not as appendices, but as just little snippets. Like, these are the notes that were on the board that day. And it's kind of magical going back to things and just tracking how it could have shaped me as a creative, even though I was, you know, whatever, 10 years old when I read it. Even also the mansion vibes are there in my book too. It's kind of cool to think about that. How about you? As a creative, like, do you think?
Yeah. I think, like, sort of you were saying, it's sort of like chicken and the egg of, like, did I gravitate this because I already had that interest, or did it just magnify? I think I loved the tone of it, of its high stakes, its murder mystery. The whole time they're like, one of us is a murderer and we're all here hanging out together. But even with that, it feels very low stakes. It's cozy, like you said.
Yeah.
And they're reading it. Now, there is such specificity in all of the details, and that is something that I have definitely come to value a lot in my writing, and in my acting, and have found to me a hallmark of good and resonant artwork. Because, like, again, it's all these tiny little details. Like, all of the clues are printed on paper towels. I mean, Westing paper products definitely sold normal paper, but they were all put on paper towels. They're all Westing branded. And Turtle eats her clues as soon as she gets them so that, you know, no one can find them and steal them. And I think there's a playfulness in this that really early on I have tabs on my book. I always do, but I especially tabbed, like, the page where they, like, list all of the apartments in order, and the page where they had all the clues. When they all move into the building, there's this little line where they're talking about all the professions, and she goes, and oh yes, one was a bookie, one was a burglar, one was a bomber, and one was a mistake. Barney Northrup, who's renting and trying to fill all these units, Barney Northrup had rented one of the apartments to the wrong person. There's, like, an intimacy there of, like, letting you in on a secret. It sort of plays with form. And like you said, all those found documents, it expands your mind a little bit of what a book can be. I'm glad you brought up the movie, because reading this, and I've always been like, I watched a lot more TV and a lot more movies than I did read. I'm a screenwriter. It's just sort of the way I'm programmed. The whole time reading this, I'm like, this needs to be made again. This is so visual.
I know. It could be like a little mini series even. Everybody loves a limited series, and I would absolutely be there for it.
Me too. This is a side note game, but do you have any ideas for who you would cast? I in my head said had such a clear vision of Judge Ford, and I cannot for the life of me think of the actress his name that I'm thinking of.
Do you know what she's in?
No, I'm trying so hard to think of it. So I'm just like watching every commercial I can so closely, waiting.
Dreamcast. I get so stressed about these because I need
I
to think
know.
so hard.
This is a
But
thing that we'll have to like come back to. And in 2 weeks, we'll be like, oh, I got it. I got
yeah, I know. I'm gonna say something and be like, no, that's not right. That's not right. Okay, let's start with, I feel like Turtle, I would want an unknown. Like, give us a
Absolutely.
new kid. You know what they don't do anymore? They put, the first build, second build, big star names, and then it says introducing this little kid.
Yes.
I loved that. I was watching, what was it? Oh, Nightmare on Elm Street, introducing Johnny Depp. It's such a flex because when they become a star, you're like, I introduced that person. I love an introducing moment. And I think in our adaptation of
Yes.
this, we would get a kid and say introducing.
Yes.
Although I loved the kid, she's probably a teenager now. In Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret. Did you see that?
I did it, but I saw, amazing reviews of it, and
It
that's a
was
book we
really
should,
good. It
yeah.
was really good. The kids in that were very sweet. But yeah, we'll get a newbie for Turtle.
I feel like Seidel should be, or Seidel should be some great character actress. Not necessarily Margot Martindale, but oh, actually, have you seen Weapons?
Yes.
Is it, yeah, Aunt
Yes.
Gladys, maybe
Yeah.
her?
She was quite spectacular and
If
creepy.
she isn't left out of the awards competition this year, I'm gonna be mad.
I
She was
know.
incredible.
But horror often is
Ugh.
overlooked. But yes, I'm on board with that.
But I think you could also, for like a lot of the kids, like for Theo and Doug, who are both high schoolers, Doug is the track star son of the Who's. You could do unknowns for that. I think Grace would have to be like a huge name that's also really fun.
Okay, Grace. I think you could do a Toni Collette.
Oh, yeah.
She also might just be on the mind because we're talking about Rob, horror
Valid.
actors. Do you have any ideas for her?
I'm more thinking like this would be one that's easy to cast. I don't have any person in mind, but like he's,
Denton would just need to be
yeah.
like a very hot person.
Yes. Yeah. And ooh, actually, Angela is always described as this like incredible beauty. And so I think maybe she wouldn't be thought of as like number one automatically. But Bryan Cranston's daughter, who is on The Pitt, I think could do a
So,
really great job of
yeah, let me
that.
look. I've only
Yeah.
watched one episode of The Pitt.
She's got the glasses and the braid. I just think she has that like quiet intensity and deep, rich inner world as an actor that I really think could make that shine. Oh, and Otis is such a fun one.
Otis, again, I think you could go for like an older character actor, like an icon if
Yeah.
it was in the budget.
Big name.
Yeah.
Star talent only.
And same for Sandy.
Oh,
I
Sandy.
loved Sandy.
Me too. And Sandy dies? That's in quotes. And when that happens, Turtle's reaction is so visceral. As she's sort of working out this great, third act scene, she loves him so much. And that she comes in that, 10, 15 years later epilogue and has a really similar dynamic with Angela's daughter. That's gorgeous.
Me too. Me too. I got turned off Sandy a little bit because he does say a little bit of a word that we shouldn't say in one of his notes
Yes.
about Chris. But I'm like, I don't know, maybe people were just saying that and it was okay back then.
Yeah, I feel like it was kind of a medical term.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I still did love him. I said, I think maybe you wouldn't say that if the book was written now,
Oh
Sandy.
yeah, I think so. I think so because like she definitely Raskin definitely writes characters as bigots. I think she might even call some out in as explicitly as bigots. So I think she would not have him. I think that would be a purposeful choice, had the book been written today to make him say sort of a non-PC phrase.
Yeah, but overall, he was very warm vibes. I did like him. his death was really emotional. I was a little sad we didn't get like to have a moment for it because it was like in the middle of that courtroom scene, as you said. But he ends up being alive, so it's okay because his real death scene, that was a doozy. That was when I was crying. So he has some memory problems. He's old, he's on his deathbed, and he's asking how everyone is doing in the Sunset Towers apartment building, how all of the folks are doing. And Turtle, much like Angela, indulges Sidel, kind of just pretends everyone is doing well, even though some of them have died, as she's telling him how they're doing. She'll say, "Oh, they're doing well, they're doing this, this, and that." And then the narrator says, "They actually died last week." Oh my God, I was so sad. I was so sad.
Devastated. I think like amidst all the mystery and murder, there's incredible kindnesses that these characters give to each other. Even Westing and all of his gaming and scheming gives to them and allows them to grow and change. I love when there is that kindness tucked in, especially to a children's book.
I know.
It also made me really want to go and rewatch
Me too. And
Clue.
you know what I recently learned? Apparently, Clue has alternate endings,
I've heard this. I
which
haven't looked
I
into
haven't
it,
seen all of
but
them. I think I
yeah.
just watched the movie once in my life, and
Me too.
I want to do a little rewatch. I feel like it's also the time of year for that,
Yes.
for a Clue rewatch, and I want to watch all the endings.
Yeah. And I'm telling this to anyone who will listen. Tim Curry has a memoir coming out in October.
Thank you
So.
for that PSA. I didn't know. And you know what? No one's taking the risks like that anymore. Apparently, it was released in the theaters, and it was the roll of the dice what ending you were going to get. That is such a cool idea.
And
Yeah, I'm
also a great
definitely.
idea now to get butts in seats in theaters. Good
Absolutely.
idea.
We should do it in our if we make the Westing game a movie.
And actually, I mean, Tim Curry is sort of only doing voice work now because of some health issues, but if we could have him play like Sandy, I think that would be
Yeah, that is the icon we need.
I'm gonna write it down in my notes.
Give Tim Curry a call.
Yes. It's like I've had bosses be like, call the guy who wrote Survivor, get him on the phone. I have an idea for him, you know? Yeah, I mean, this is like episode maybe 87 or something of the podcast, and
Congratulations.
thank you. There is just nothing really like it. It is such a standalone, magnificent work.
It is. I really took my time on this. I only finished it last night. And I would say one thing about this, and I'm saying it as a compliment, though it's going to sound like an insult. It's very put downable.
You can
Like,
marinate on it.
you can pause. You can pause, pop your bookmark in there. There are like a lot of buttons, and I actually appreciated that about it because sometimes, like, that's why I like a short story collection. It gives you room to take a breather and not feel too daunted by how much you have left. But anyway, I finished it last night and I told my partner, "You got to read this."
Yes.
It's great to read as an adult. I didn't feel like I felt very challenged by
You
the
really
mystery.
have to pay attention. And I love that like one of the most important clues is mentioned in the reading of the will is like it's what you don't have amongst all of this information that will lead you to the answer. I think that in terms of like as writing craft, perfect. As like a lesson to children,
Yes.
perfect. Just everywhere, incredible.
It also got me a little frustrated with them. I was like, "Guys, you gotta pull it together here. It's obvious."
And America the Beautiful is a huge aspect of this. And they put all of their clues together finally. And they're like, what are we missing? And I'm there, like, writing. It's a
Yeah.
B and then an E. And it works out. Oh, it's so satisfying. It's
It
so
is.
satisfying.
And I kind of wish I did what you were doing. I let myself go along for the ride. I was like, "You know what? I'm not going to try too hard. I'm not going to be doing all of that, what you did." But I kind of wish I would have done that. I want to know if I would have like figured out the answer sooner. I don't think I would have figured out the answer, the real answer,
Oh,
but
yes.
the fake answer of pro, I was kind of just along for the ride with all of them. I wasn't doing my own independent thinking.
I think I did it because I remembered how much I loved this book, but I think I had that sensation maybe, or like that vague memory of like there were things I didn't get, or like things I didn't pick up on, and things I was, I lost. So I think I was just so excited to come back to this book that I was like gobbling up every little detail.
There were so many treats, so many funny lines.
Oh my, hilarious book.
Like I was laughing out loud. Oh, you know what part made me laugh? Angela and Sydell think that the murderer is a twin.
Yes.
And there's this part, I really should have bookmarked it, where they're trying to bring up twins in at the party that everybody's in attendance at. And Sydell's like, she says to someone, "Oh, that Denton Deer is so handsome. He's such a catch. Too bad he's not twins."
Yeah.
The way she said it killed me. I kind of wish I didn't bring it up because it was funnier than what I just said.
No, it's an incentive to go read it because she is
Yeah.
going to like every person and trying to insert the word twins in the conversation, hoping someone will be like, "Oh, I'm a twin." And even she designs a whole outfit for it and asks Angela to wear a matching outfit. So they're twins. And then Grace says, "No, you're not wearing that." And so Sidney's like, "You left me here just looking crazy," even though that's her normal state. I loved that whole dynamic.
Me too. It was so fun. Yeah, it really did make me want to be a part of a little community like this. I mean, I do always want that. It makes me mourn the, I don't know, pre-social media times or whatever it is that has made us, I think, a little bit more insular. There was a moment during COVID. I feel like we were all about community when COVID was happening. It was the silver lining. We were all, masking up, putting little signs on our lawns saying, "Go." What were they called? You know what I'm saying.
Yes.
Everyone was treating cashiers with respect.
Yeah. Essential workers.
Yes, essential
Essential
workers.
workers.
Thank you so much. I think that was the one silver lining of that period. One of the also the like the environment was like happy with us
Things are
letting
healing.
things up for a minute. But I think we've lost that. I think there's a part of me that just yearns to go and live in a small town, a la like Stars Hollow or whatever, where everyone and everyone, I'm sure it would, get tiring in reality. But I just love the idea of community of people helping each other out. Do you need my clues? We'll swap our clues. Let's get together and talk about it. And I think it maybe sounds a little bit more radical now than maybe it did at another time. It's kind of sad, like this would not really go down now.
Yeah, it's such a huge element kind of early on that they get snowed in. At one point, like the electricity goes out. It feels like none of those things would be applicable today. And yeah, that sort of forced intimacy, which is one of the most beautiful. Yeah, because they're snowed in and they're like, "Well, I guess we have to do this mystery. I guess the rest of our lives can't really intrude."
Which was very clever. I think you needed something to have these characters actually take it seriously besides the money. The money wasn't enough on its own for some people. Like the forced intimacy was clever because then you didn't have to think about, oh, well, really realistically, wouldn't this
Yeah.
character go and be doing this? It was a great cast of characters.
Oh my goodness. I think if you, the listener, are spurred by anything in this episode, number one, read this book. Number two, maybe host a murder mystery party. Maybe that's what we should be
Yes.
doing.
I've never been to one before. I was invited to one last year and it was themed Disco Diva. And I bought a whole outfit. And then I don't know what happened, but I couldn't go in the end. And I was sad. So I needed it to happen this year. I need to go to a murder mystery party.
Had a friend host one for her birthday like a week after we all finished high school, and it was one of the best nights of my life. It was so fun.
What was your character? Do you remember?
Yeah, so the whole it was all like sort of prohibition themed. A lot of the characters were related to like a bar, so I was the bartender. So I wore like a sort of like caterer's outfit with a little bow tie, and I always had a rag in my pocket, and I was just wiping down surfaces.
And that was the best night of your life.
Exactly. And I was like collecting people's drinks and I was like, can I do a drink? It was so fun. And actually, I had never planned to be an actor. I sort of came into it unsuspectingly a couple years ago. But that night, way before I ever found out, they gave awards for best performances. And I got one of them for my performance as
Did you feel
that
after that? Did you feel sort of called to acting anymore or?
No, I think it just gave me a little boost. And I was about to go to college for screenwriting, and I was just so dead set on. And I think that's the thing about childhood is your focus is so unshakable sometimes. But it's like in a hindsight way of like when I started acting, I was like, you know what? It's always been there. It's always.
Yeah, you were wiping surfaces at a party.
I was
That's
so in
dedication to the craft.
character. Yeah.
A party that wasn't yours. That's
No.
also very generous. You were so in character, and also, I'm sure the girl whose birthday it was really appreciated you.
Yeah, it was like
Actually,
that.
that's kind of
Yeah.
genius. Like, throw a party, murder mystery party, and have someone play like the housekeeper.
Yes.
Like, and it's part of their mission to keep everything clean.
Yeah. And you like assign it to a, like a really dedicated person, like you like who takes it seriously. Like I was, like this girl had a lot of functions at her house, so I knew her family very well. So I was like bringing empty cups to her like mom and older sister to keep the house clean, and I know they were like, "She's doing a really good job. We really like you, Erin."
Great party idea, honestly.
So good. And it was just so funny that you're halfway through and Tony's dead. And it's just, you know, just like splayed out on the carpet. And then he like got up and was just hanging out, just wandering around afterwards. But I, yes, that's what we should all do. No more birthday parties, only murder mystery parties.
I like it. I like it. When's your birthday?
December, early
So
December.
you have time.
I do.
Mine just passed.
Oh no, happy birthday.
Thank you. Okay, not just like a month ago.
Oh well,
Actually, now I'm looking
you.
at the date 2 months ago.
Oh well, you can still do it. It's your birthday. No
Next year.
rules. But I think that's all of my notes. There's so much. I mean, you could talk about this book for 10 hours. Is there anything you know you wanted to talk about that we haven't covered?
Okay, Purple Waves.
Yes.
At the very beginning, but yes, then we can wrap up. Sorry, but actually, genuinely wanted to ask you about this. At
Yeah.
the very beginning, they're telling the story. Someone long ago ran out of the mansion screaming, "Purple waves, purple waves, purple waves." What do you think?
Ooh.
Oh, you know what? It must have just been Sandy. So Sandy told Otis. Sandy probably knew that he had already put the clues purple and waves in the clues just to throw them off, maybe.
Yeah, I think it was the thing of Sandy had like had such a long vision and was such a planner and a game maker that I feel like maybe he just like put that out in the world, you know, 20 years ago. And was like, I'm gonna build this myth around my sort of abandoned, secretive house on the hill. That's sort of what I would say.
And Sydell just happened to paint her cane with purple waves that day.
Is that right at the beginning?
I think it's right when they first go to read the will. She comes in with a cane that is painted with purple waves. There were a lot of red herrings in this. Like, there were a lot of things that you think are relevant. Honestly, everyone was putting together these clues, and they were very smart. I mean, a lot
Yeah.
of them were wrong. Like the twins thing. I think it
Yeah.
said the objective to win in
Yeah.
the will. And from that, they said the objective could be twin.
Twins.
Sounds
Yeah.
like twin, which, it's a bit of a reach, but when it comes to puzzles, sometimes you do have to reach. Like that game I was telling you about, Blueprints, there are lots of puzzles in that. And I confess I had to Google some answers because sometimes it's a reach like that.
Yeah, and even you could maybe, if you wanted to stretch it, there are some presumed identities that maybe you could
Oh,
say are twins of
I
a
didn't even think
sort.
of
I'm
that.
just thinking of that right now. But I also love that, like, you can work out clues. Like, Theo is just doing chemistry homework and is like, well, maybe I can apply this to that. And even then, it spells out Otis. Like, he finds a solution in it. I loved it. And I again, it's like with Turtle, I love that he's just like assuming answers based on his perspective and his world. I loved it.
Yeah, that chemistry part was wild. I was like, you're a genius.
But so I guess that's it. Would you
Yes.
consider this required reading?
I'm going to go out and say, yes, I
Yeah.
would consider this required reading.
Without a doubt. Yeah.
It's a good time. It's a good time. And you know what? I think a lot of mystery writers could benefit from a read of this. She's doing it right.
Yeah.
Raskin.
I bet if you go through, like, now having refreshed myself on the actual story and answers, I feel like if you, there's such an economy here that I feel like you could go through and, like, line by line be like, oh, here's a little tidbit, and here's a little tidbit, and here's a little tidbit. Like, I just want to read the first sentence. The sun sets in the west. Parentheticals, just about everyone knows that, and parentheticals, but sunset towers faced east. Strange, with an exclamation point. Immediate. Yes.
Which comes into play right at the end. But that's so funny. Strange. Moving on.
I remembered the and it didn't really have a lot of meaning in the end, but they set it up as kind of big. I remembered that they had one-way glass on all of their windows. I remembered that element.
Yeah. The apartments sound very nice. Oh,
Thank
and
you.
also, all the apartments were, I guess, the same kind of layout, or many of the apartments were the same
Yeah.
layout. But that just played into, and but they were sold to each person as different things. Like the
Yes.
3-bedroom apartment was sold as a 3-bedroom apartment to Grace, but as a 1-bedroom to the judge,
Yeah. With
because
like a
that's,
study and yeah.
yeah, because that's what they needed these people in these apartments. But that also added a bit of mystery and put some suspicion right from the beginning on
Yeah.
Barney.
Yeah. And I actually just now thinking of this, the lawyer plays sort of a small role, but his last name is Plum. And now I'm thinking Clue, Professor Plum, when did the game come out? Was
Ooh.
it before
Okay, while you're looking that up,
yes.
by the way, board game suggestion.
Yeah.
It's called Mysterium. Have you played it?
Oh no.
It's
But
like
Clue came out in
Clue.
1949, so
So she
definitely
knew.
she
She knew
knew.
what she was doing.
Mysterium?
Yes, very fun.
I've been looking for one. Can you play it with two people?
You can. It's better with more.
Okay.
Wait, let me think. I think you can. Like, there's a version of it where you can play
Yeah.
with two people. It's kind of like Clue meets Dixit, which I actually haven't played, but I do know that it's about pictures.
Love it.
Anyway, I'll leave it at that. It's good.
Hell yeah. Well, thank you so much for doing
Thank
this
you.
and
This
doing
was
this
very fun.
book. Your book comes out October 7th. Is there anything else that you'd like to plug?
Let me think. Let me think. Oh, if you like mysteries, season 2 of Mistletoe Murders is coming out on Hallmark. It is a cozy mystery. I think it comes out, I don't know, sometime in October or November, season 1, and then season 2 they're playing. It's very fun. It's, yeah, mysteries, murder mysteries. Actually, really dovetails quite nicely into this episode.
Yeah.
Thank you for reminding me to plug it.
Oh, I'm definitely checking it out. That's so fun. Well, read The Westing Game. I think I have to check out Ellen Raskin's other books.
I know, me too.
And I love that she did so many of these covers. Like, it's incredible we haven't covered Wrinkle in Time yet, but it's gonna be so cool to look at that and be like, that's Ellen.
Yeah, I want to look up what cover it is.
Yeah, the first edition.
And I want to do what was it, Fig and Phantom?
I think so. Fig and Phantom, Fig with two G's, which must mean something,
Yeah.
knowing Helen.
Yes,
Well, I think that's it. I'll end the recording if you feel good.
I feel good.